America. This is Tuesday, May the 3rd, 2005, and this is the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, and welcome to all of you. As is our custom, we'd like to recognize those who have served our country first, and we'd appreciate it if all of you who have would stand.
Sure. Hopefully they didn't bring you tomatoes.
They didn't have no tomatoes.
You didn't wear your uniform. Colonel Boquist.
Never does.
You get a lot more respect when you do that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Leadership's a lonely place.
For your service and for securing our future, and we're doing our very best in this committee to secure yours. We're most grateful. This morning I'm going to ask that we stand in a moment of silence as we have just lost another one of our Oregon troops in the war in Iraq. Would you stand and we'll remember Rick Crockford. Thank you. Okay, this morning we have a full agenda. I hope everyone who wanted to testify on any of the measures has signed up. We welcome everybody. Okay, committee, we will be taking up House Bill 2681 will be our first bill today. Just a little bit out of order for the benefit of some of those who have to get to another hearing.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2681 requires school districts to issue high school diplomas to veterans who did not complete high school because of wartime military services, the Korean War, who request a diploma. You have the -1 amendment, which makes future combat veterans eligible. You also have the -3 amendment from Representative Barnhart that replaces the measure. It requires combat veteran in order to receive high school diploma to have received a general education development or a post-secondary degree or a minimum score as determined by the military department on the Armed Forces Vocational Aptitude Battery.
Thank you, Dr. Stembridge. Sheriff, I'm sure you meant general education diploma.
That's correct.
Okay. Development was a good word, though, but we better stick with the
general education diploma.
Yes, I noticed you didn't use an acronym. That would have been okay. We collect happily for anyone using an acronym during your testimony. We've got the Veterans Fund back there, a basket, and you're on your honor. Of course, we do keep note of those. However, just in case you forget. Okay.
Madam Chair, I have an additional copy of the -3 if any of the members.
Anyone need a -3 amendment? I'd like to thank good administrators for being so thoughtful and giving us those amendments to all these bills early. We appreciate it. Representative Barnhart, do you have any comments on the -3?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think the -3 did everything that the committee discussed except one, and that is what's contained in the -1s, which was intended that the -3 include those, but it doesn't, in fact. It does remove the old extraneous language. It does deal with the issue of the various ways in which a person can qualify that we discussed on the top of page 2, and it does list all of the other conflicts that apparently we knew about at the time, but The sub C under sub 4, which should go after line 27 on page 2, didn't get in there. And of course, sub C is the language on the dash 1 amendment, which says, quote, served in the armed forces of the United States in an area designated as a combat zone by the President of the United States, which would be the prospective piece if it were in there. Otherwise, I think it does all the things that we talk about after Representative Brun's question.
Is there any further discussion? Is nobody here testifying?
No, this is a work era of work session. We did not put a witness registration sheet out, Madam Chair. You could ask if there's any.
Is there anyone here who would like to speak to House Bill 2681 on the high school diploma? If not, committee, I think it's essential that we add the two lines that were left out, that were in the First Amendment. Or can we, by adopting both, could we cure the problem?
I think so. Madam Chair, maybe I should ask Jim. Could we move both of these?
I believe, Representative Barnhart, Madam Chair, that you could. I don't think that they are incompatible.
The only difference, of course, is that instead of line 6, it goes on after line 27.
We can let the legislative council.
They can
blend
fix it.
The two.
They can fix it. Okay.
Yes, that's the instruction that we'll give.
In that case, Madam Chair, are you ready for a motion?
I am.
Madam Chair, I've moved the dash 3s to House Bill 2681.
The dash 3.
Dash 1. Dash 3. Dash 2. Dash
3. I think you need the
dash 3. Oh, you're right.
Dash 3. I don't have the dash 2.
I don't have dash 2 either. Representative Barnhart has moved the dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2681. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, we will adopt amendment dash 3.
And now, Madam Chair, I move the dash 1s as an amendment to the now bill, the dash 3s, to be inserted in the proper location after line 27 on page 2 of the dash 3s.
Representative Barnhart has moved the dash 1 amendment to be a part of House Bill 2681 with its dash 3, and with a change on line 2 of the amendment to say on page 2, comma, line 27. Mm-hmm. Is there any discussion?
Well, Madam Chair, if I may, just for the record, as I understand it, the purpose of this is to have the dash 3 replace the bill, and then the dash 1 modify the dash 3 by adding that third section under subsection 4 to allow for qualification for people who are in the Armed Forces of the United States in an area designated to be a combat zone by the President of the United States.
And it includes World War I, II, the Korean conflict, the Vietnam War.
Right, not changing anything.
Operation Urgent Fury in Grenada, Operation Just Cause Panama, Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, the Persian Gulf War, Operation Restore Hope in Somalia, Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan, and or Operation Iraqi Freedom in Iraq. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the dash 1 is adopted, the House Bill 2681.
Madam Chair.
Representative Barnhart.
I move House Bill 2681 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barnhart has moved House Bill 2681 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Aaron.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Goldberg.
Aye.
Representative
Ruin.
Aye.
Representative Carr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Cohn.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. Hearing a unanimous vote, glad Representative Hunt made it just in time.
No thanks to traffic on I-5.
That's what I understand that.
For the record, it was in Representative Bruin's district, the accident.
Now, Representative Hunt, we're not allowing for discussion. Having heard a unanimous vote for House Bill 2681, the measure carries. And Representative Barnhart, since you were so good at handling these amendments, would you be kind enough to carry this on the House floor?
I will, ma'am. Thank you.
I'll now close the work session on House Bill 2681 and open a work session on House Bill 2862.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2862 directs public post-secondary education institutions to award credit for education and training obtained in the armed forces of the United States. You have two competing amendments. The dash one requires community colleges to do this. The dash two allows the community colleges to do this. In both cases, the awarding of credit would be according to standards adopted by the Board of Education of the Community College District.
Dash two, I have, and a dash one.
Can you talk?
Do we have a dash three?
Madam Chair, the only ones that I have are the dash one and the dash two, which we distributed previously. You were in the middle of the discussion on this when we had to end last time.
Right. The concern was in section two of the bill, it says the community college shall give credit for education and training obtained by a person while serving in the armed forces of the United States as defined in ORS, Oregon Revised Statute 341-529. The education and training for which credit may be given must meet the standards adopted by the State Board of Education by rule, and we've changed that to say adopted by the Board of Education of the Community College District, and that is in the dash one amendment, and we do have the dash two right there with it. The dash two for line five, instead of saying a community college shall give credit, it will say a community college may give credit.
Madam Chair, if I might explain what I was distributing here. I made an error in discussing this last time. I was under the impression that the Oregon University system had testified on this bill. They had not. My communications with the Oregon University system had to do with our putting together the legislative concept, and I distributed the discussion that I had with them at that time. So that's the information that I have on the Oregon University system, which I've handed out.
Okay. Is there a discussion regarding
Madam Chair,
the dash two amendment?
Question for the good administrator.
Yes, sir.
So what you're correcting here, Jim, I think, is what you're saying is that in either case that we pass here, this is going to direct the Oregon State System of Higher Education Chancellor's Office to establish a standard. Because I think previously you said that they said yes, they would do that, but we're going to be directing them to do that as part of the state system, correct?
Madam Chair and Representative Boakwith, my understanding is that the university system is already doing this, and they specified how they were doing it in this communication with me. Each of their universities does it slightly differently, right, perhaps, and they do it in conjunction with those standards that we specified. They are actually the American
Council on Education.
Yeah, American Council on Education. The question came up is why higher education was not in the room and was not involved in the discussions on this. And this is
I think they're the answer to that.
Cindy, would you like to come forward?
Can I ask it?
This is Cindy Hunt of Legislative Council. Does a beautiful job in working through all the hundreds and hundreds of education bills.
Well, maybe it'll be answered here. I was going to ask Administrator Stemperich. He said at the beginning these two amendments were competing, and I'm wondering if he could give us a little bit of the thought behind that.
The dash one stays with the original intent of the bill, which is to direct post-secondary education institutions to award credit for education and training obtained while serving in the armed forces of the United States. The dash two makes it optional for community colleges.
Do you have copies of the
mm-hmm. Cindy, could you explain to us the difference between in law of may and shall?
Cindy Hunt, Senior Deputy Legislative Counsel. Chair Nelson, well, the difference between may and shall is that may gives authorization, shall is directive. So with the shall, community colleges must give credit for education and training in the armed services, where with the may, it's optional for them to do so.
Any other questions of the Representative Boquist?
Yeah, Madam Chair. Cindy, then the difference between may and shall in this case is whether it is a mandate, is what you're saying. If it says shall, it's a mandate to the community colleges.
Yeah. Chair Nelson, Representative Boquist, if I assume you're asking in reference to the original bill or in reference to the dash one amendments, which retains the shall. The dash two, of course, changes it to may, which makes it more optional.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Last time when we were discussing this, we had a disagreement over the meaning of the section with the shall language in it, forgetting for the moment who it is that does the adopting, because I think we're settled on the dash, on either the dash one or the dash two for that purpose. But on the first part of it, my reading of this was that the section mandates the community colleges establish standards for giving credit, and then do give credit in accordance with those standards. What they have control over under Section 2, as I read it at least, is what the standards are, within, of course, the range that they have to set up standards that are reasonable that actually will lead to some people getting credit. Now, do you read it in that way or in some other way?
Chair Nelson, Representative Barnhart, no, that's correct. With the amendments before you, it directs the Community College Board to adopt the standards, although leaving in the shall would mean that they could not adopt standards that were unreasonable that wouldn't give credit for any education and training, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But they could adopt standards that any credit that was given would need to meet. So, yeah, your reading on it is correct. I'd agree with that.
Okay. Now, if I could, Madam Chair. Now, if we change it to May, if my reading of that would mean that adopting a standard and giving credit would be purely optional with the community colleges and would conform with what I understand to be existing law.
Chair Nelson, Representative Barnhart, that's correct, because currently it's within the purview of a community college to give educational credit for education and training that's received from the military or from other sources, and that's at their discretion, and of course community college boards adopt standards in that area.
Any other questions of the good lawyer?
Representative
Boquist? Do you have questions?
No, I have it. I'm ready to make a motion for a work session.
So, no more questions. Thank you very much, Cindy, and for all you do and your excellence. We really appreciate it. Now, Representative Boquist.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the Amendment 2 to the original Bill 2862.
Representative Boquist has moved the Dash 2 Amendment to House Bill 2862. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection?
Madam. Yes.
Representative Barnhart,
well,
what do you want?
The same objection that I had last time. It simply restates the current law, and if we want to really tell the community colleges that they're going to have to establish standards and that they're going to have to give credit where the standards are met, then this doesn't get there. So I object to it for that reason.
Madam Chair, to my amendment, I'm not going to agree or disagree with my good colleague to my right here, and it's ironic that you are to my right in this particular meeting. But, you know,
well, Steve.
I sit here regularly.
I see.
And that is refreshing.
We're not at 18
though,
months either, so you're saying. I look at this as the community colleges are so far out in front on veteran support already that, I mean, we need to give them the latitude to make things happen, and they're doing an exceptionally good job already, and some of our own state institutions are less than far out in front. So I support the amendment, too, for that reason. Thank you.
I likewise have problems with this amendment, and particularly line 7, which says, for which credit may be given. And I'm just going to trust our good community colleges to give credit. It would be terrible for these individuals who served our nation to, you know, take a course and they may and may not get credit. I hope that's not the issue.
Madam Chair.
Representative Farr.
May I just say one thing? If I understand what Cindy Hunt said, they would not be able to adopt standards that wouldn't require them to give credits. Is that what I understood you to say, Cindy? They wouldn't have the latitude.
I'm Cindy Hunt, Legislative Council's office. Chair Nelson, Representative Farr, that's correct. With the shall in there, they wouldn't be able to adopt standards that were so stringent that they could never give credit.
Representative Hunt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just concur with Representative Boquist. I think, especially looking back at the notes I took when we had the public hearing on this, at least as I wrote it down, Mr. McDonald and Colonel Caldwell at least talked about the fact that this is generally working well today in terms of credit being granted in community colleges. And so I think we've got a situation with community colleges, as what we're called, that are governed by independently elected bodies, where it's generally working well. The OUS system, in contrast, the Oregon University system, in contrast, is under our control. Yes, I owe a dollar for that. It is under our control. So actually, I think it's inappropriate to have a bifurcation the way we do it, that we say to community colleges, you're independently governed, we encourage you to do it. The university system, you're under the state's control, we command you to do it.
Is there further discussion, Representative Crump? There are some problems with the shall. If we were going to do the shall, it states on line 19 that it would have to be ready for the 2006 and 2007 academic year. If we say shall, and it goes back to the bigger issue of total curriculum alignment of all the state community colleges, and after working in a school district that only has 7 little schools and they can't seem to get a curriculum aligned, I'm sorry, but this is a big issue about curriculum and all the requirements for each one of those classes. Every class that's held in a community college, which we know is immense, that they would have to, you know, have agreement amongst all the, 17 community colleges that this is what this means. If we can't even agree on a budget number in this body here in 6 months, I don't think asking our community colleges to do that would be reasonable, and I, too, support the dash 2. Well, I think everybody's had a chance to say what, if you haven't, speak now or forever hold your peace. All right. Now, Representative Boquist, we're to your motion, I believe. Mm-hmm. There are no objections, right?
Warren Hart objected that he changed his mind also.
His was not an official objection.
Whatever
was
your, what your pleasure, Madam.
Yes, it was not an official. It was just we were just speaking because we needed to get it out right now.
Metaphorically, yes.
Yes. All right, seeing no objections, we've adopted the dash two. Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 2862 with the dash two as amended to the House floor with a due pass.
Representative Boquist has moved House Bill 2862 with the dash two amendment to the House with a due pass recommendation.
Madam
Is there
Chair,
any discussion?
Doesn't this have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means?
Dr. Stembridge.
Okay. This has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. It has a zero fiscal impact on it. We have requested that the subsequent referral be rescinded. We need to get permission from the Speaker. We haven't heard back from the Speaker yet, so we're in a little bit of an awkward position there. I've suggested this before, and committees haven't really gone for it, but I'm going to suggest it again, allow for the Speaker to send it to Ways and Means if she continues to want it to go to Ways and Means.
But I have signed a letter asking that it not go to Ways and Means.
Jim, if I understand the way the rule works, a motion here or a passage of a motion here to send it to the floor with a due pass has the effect of referring it to Ways and Means with a due pass if the Speaker continues to want to do that.
Madam Chair, I think you could assume that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Boquist?
Madam Chair, and I am assuming that in making my motion.
Thank you.
Good assumption.
Is okay. Is there any more discussion? Aaron, get us out of this, will you please?
Representative Boquist?
Yes.
Representative Ruin?
Aye.
Representative Carr?
Aye.
Representative?
Aye.
Representative Hong?
Aye.
Representative
Barnhart.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. House Bill 2862 with the dash two amendment is passed, and I'm very, very grateful for this committee to sponsor that bill, to give our military an opportunity to get education as they need it and where they need it. And I think it's wonderful that we have a system that's going to work together. That's what's important. The community colleges and the universities, that's just great. And furthermore, you just passed the bill that allows them to get to college, and I think that's wonderful. I'm going to close the... Representative Boquist, would you like to carry this good bill?
Delighted, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2862. We have with us our distinguished representative, Jeff Krupp. And do you want to come forward, Representative Krupp? And
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good morning. For the record, I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp, House District 17. You have four of my bills before you this morning for work session. And I would just, Madam Chair, if it would please the Chair, I'll just say to you very briefly that I'm in favor of all of the amendments for all of these bills. If you want to move them through the process without any further language from me, that would be fine. But also to share with you, there is another bill before you for which I have proposed it's House Concurrent Resolution Number 9, basically a gut and stuff, Madam Chair, to name this particular day as Atomic Veterans Day. And Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are gentlemen or individuals here who are atomic veterans who would like to ask you to so designate this day. I believe they're here in the audience, and I would ask that you would give them an opportunity to share with you why they think this is an important recognition. And with that, Madam Chair, I am not going to bore you any further.
Well, good.
I will simply get out of the way and let more important people have the ability to influence your decisions this day. Thank you all very
good
much.
Good, Representative. Wait, yes, just a moment. Could we have the bill numbers, please, of your other four bills before we go to HCR 9?
Madam Chair, House Bill 3333 is the Wounded Soldier Relief Fund. There are dash 1 and dash 2 amendments. I'm fine with those. House Bill 3331 is the Adjutant General and Deputy's Pay. We do have a chart at your request and the comparison of other pay schedules. Those are there for you. And then HJM 33, which is minimal time serving for the Guard and Reserve, just a memorial to Congress asking them to carefully consider shortening that time. And then HJM 32, which is the Oregon National Guard Reserve Retirement Act, again asking Congress to allow service members of the Guard and Reserve to retire at 55 years of age after 30 years of service.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for all those good bills and caring so much for our military and our veterans and for making that trip to Iraq to boost the morale and so we fully understand what's happening over there. Really,
thank you, Madam Chair, and I have to tell you, this is to get these issues finalized and placed into law will be one of my crowning achievements in my legislative career. It's been truly my honor to be associated with our service members, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. It is my honor to do this.
Really is. Okay, in this case, I'm going to open a public hearing and work session on House Concurrent Resolution 9.
Madam Chair, HCR 9, originally it was recognized that June 14th each year is Honor Our Troops Day. The dash 1 replaces the measure, designates July 16th as Atomic Veterans Day, urges veterans who were involved with various aspects of nuclear warfare to contact the National Association of Atomic Veterans or to contact the Oregon Director of Veterans Affairs. You were given copies of the dash 1. I have some more if members need them. This is a test of your staff.
Yeah. Oh, quick, let's find it. When you know it.
So far, mine passes.
Oh my gosh, I did have it.
Back. All right. Does that count? That
no, that count as a mistake.
Okay. Either way, this is okay. Our infantry regiment was the unit during World War II that went in there.
I would like to just take the time to give the brief on what has changed in House Concurrent Resolution 9.
This was listed as a discussion.
This proposed amendment says this, if you'll bear with me. Whereas many of the nation's veterans, including those who are residents of Oregon, were subjected to varying amounts of radiation because of the testing of atomic weapons from 1945 to 1963. And whereas the potential harm to these veterans was unknown at the time of the testing, resulting in the exposure of many veterans to harmful doses of radiation and causing them to suffer debilitating degenerative diseases that affect the veterans and their descendants. And whereas veterans who were early test subjects were required to sign an oath of secrecy regarding their involvement in the atomic testing, preventing these veterans from informing the Veterans Health Administration of their medical problems that resulted from radiation until 1996. when these veterans were released from their oaths of secrecy. And whereas in 1979, the National Association of Atomic Veterans was created to locate these veterans, to honor the sacrifices they made, and to help these veterans and their families in obtaining medical treatment and assistance. And whereas many veterans who were early test subjects were injured in the line of duty but received no medals because they were not in combat. And whereas the number of members in this group is rapidly decreasing because of the age of these veterans, and it is most appropriate to recognize their sacrifices for this nation's freedom. And whereas by engaging in a national research and education effort for atomic war veterans, the National Association of Atomic Veterans is promoting early detection of medical problems and research and documentation of the connection between radiation exposure and resultant cancer and other debilitating degenerative diseases and genetic mutations. And whereas the first atomic bomb was detonated on July 16, 1945, now therefore, we, the members of the 73rd Legislative Assembly, designate July the 16th of every year as Atomic Veterans Day and urge those veterans who participated in the United States atmospheric and underground nuclear weapons test and the United States occupation of Hiroshima and Nagasaki following World War II, and those veterans who were prisoners of war in Hiroshima and Nagasaki or served in gaseous diffusion plants, to contact the Oregon State Commander of the National Association of Atomic Veterans or the Director of Veterans Affairs, and be it further resolved that a copy of this resolution shall be sent to the Oregon State Commander of the National Association of Atomic Veterans and the Director of Veterans Affairs. Those in the audience who are members of the National Association of Atomic Veterans, would you stand? We'd be honored to have you testify if you would like. Please come forward.
Madam Chair, my name is Fred Schaefer, and I'm the Oregon State Commander of the National Association of Atomic Veterans. I volunteered for this job about 10 years ago, and nobody else has taken it away from me yet. I have.
It happens when you do a good job at it.
I was the first one to put out on the website a National Association of Atomic Veterans webpage, and our national commander has praised me from that point on. He told me that I flooded him, and if it wasn't for the internet, we wouldn't be where we're at today.
Mm-hmm.
And
that is awesome.
We are beginning to get some recognition. 2 years ago at convention, we asked Principi for an IRR register, which is the Ionized Radiation Registry.
Boy, you just got out of a fine really well.
I'm new at this. I'm fine all the time anyway. But he gave us this report. All we had to do was ask for it. The Agent Orange boys had a report, so we asked for it, and we've had our second edition of this come out. And it's helping us. We've got an 800 number that we can call to get anybody that has been involved in the test to Portland for a complete physical and get their preliminary legwork going for them in the IRR.
Could we find out what that 800 number is? So we found out that people are listening as far away as Japan to this.
I don't have it presently with me.
Okay.
VA has it. If they call the VA of any state and ask, they'll be told, we don't know what you're talking about. So ask for compensation and pension, and it's a brand new door that you open up.
All right.
And
do we know the website?
NAV, NAAV.com.
NAAV as in victory?
Yes. National Association of Atomic Veterans .com.
National Association of Atomic Veterans?
Yes.
All right. Okay, that is
there you'll
wonderful.
Find my website will be off that one also. Mine's drawn out further than that.
How many do we have now in the state of Oregon?
I've got two groups. We've got a Portland group that we meet 1 month. We've got a Mid-Valley group that meets every second month. And I'm looking forward to getting a third group in Southern Oregon, whatever. But Portland and the Willamette Valley, we have probably more potential because they don't have to travel so far. And in Portland, I've got probably on our list that we call whenever we're going to have a meeting, we have approximately 40 people that we call. Approximately 32, 33 of them are members of NAV. The others are my drawing power. They're brand new people that have just heard about us and coming on. Same way here in, I have a meeting in Lebanon, and we have that. We have approximately 40 people that we call. And we're looking for July 16th to put us on the calendar and have a big celebration for this. And we would be the fourth state in the union to have this
done. Is that right? The fourth state?
Yes.
All right.
We'd sure love to have it.
Well, sounds like a great day for a lot of great men and women, I'm assuming.
There's a lot.
Were there women then involved?
We haven't run across too many women. My aunt, you got to say yes, they were. My aunt was not military. She worked for the Forest Service out of Berkeley, California, for Loma Linda. They went down with Loma Linda to Desert Rock. And her stories that she wrote her husband, I've got and I put on my website, where when the plane landed, they took full-grown Douglas fir trees to Desert Rock for the bombs and blast. She was 10 miles away and she died of breast cancer.
Oh, my goodness.
Which they say was not part of it, but many of that group did pass away.
And where is Desert Rock?
That is in Nevada.
Nevada.
I was in the 62 test sites out at Christmas Island, and the big one that was went off at Johnson Island that was visible. It was it was atmospheric, and you could see it in Hawaii.
My goodness.
And they had two of them get away from them on Johnson Island where the guys are cleaning up with T-shirts and dungarees. And now that spot is too hot. You can't get there. So, you know, but we didn't get hurt. We had all kinds of protective coatings.
Sure.
Uh-huh.
Representative Barr.
Madam Chair, are we in work session?
We are. And we have public hearing and work session together here.
Well, may I make a motion to the -1 amendments?
I think that'd be wonderful. Mr. Frazier, stay right there.
I make a motion that we adopt the -1 amendments to House Concurrent Resolution 9.
Representative Barr has moved that we adopt the -1 amendments to House Concurrent Resolution 9. Is there any discussion?
I have a question.
Oh, my. Representative Barnhart, don't you have another meeting?
Very short question.
Just kidding.
Do the other states adopt the same date?
Yes.
Thank you. That's my question.
That was a good question.
Madam Chair, always thinking forward to the floor discussion. We'll have this later.
Right.
Maybe Fred could answer one question for me, Madam Chair.
Okay.
And Fred, if you don't know, maybe Colonel Caldwell can jump up and give us a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Correct me if I am wrong, but I believe in one of our trips to Southern Oregon, Representative Bruin and I were looking at some documentation on the wall. And I believe either the 181 Regiment or the 162 Regiment of the 41st Infantry Division from the state of Oregon actually was assigned the Hiroshima or the Nagasaki sector during the occupation period.
That I couldn't answer for sure.
And I see a nodding head. And I would assume in those days there would have been at least 2,000 to 6,000 Oregonians that would have been exposed to this during that. And I see a nod at the back of the head again. I believe it's the 181 Regimental Combat Team. Yeah.
They said in that time frame they had 450,000 people contaminated.
Wow.
So You divide that into Oregon, it's just one basic 50th of that. I still say we've got more atomic veterans in the state. I bet we have 2,000. I got a new one today from Albany that he just signed up. Got one on the internet yesterday. So they're finding us.
Were you based in Alamogordo, New Mexico?
No, I was aboard a floating service station out there where we refueled the tin cans that patrolled the outside perimeter of Christmas Island, where the Russian oiler was anchored in a bottomless ocean, refueling her tin cans.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were there for 13 blasts. We were the target ship of one blast.
Oh,
you saw
goodness.
It come out of the plane, and then you put on glasses to watch it.
Oh, my goodness.
You could catch the tuna down there, but you couldn't eat them. They were contaminated. It's amazing. I've got stories from widows. I hate to call somebody to see how they're going because I talked to a widow that just buried her husband, and she's very upset.
Sure. Absolutely. You made a very unselfish sacrifice, and we're so grateful to all of you. I want you to know that.
Thank you.
Is there any objection to the dash one? Seeing none, the dash one amendment to House Concurrent Resolution 9 is adopted. Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Concurrent Resolution 9 as amended to the floor with a do adopt recommendation.
Representative Farr has moved House Concurrent Resolution 9 as amended to the House floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Aaron?
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Collins.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative
Boquist.
Aye.
Chair
Nelson. Aye. Okay. The good administrator that we have for this committee sitting here has just suggested that since this House Concurrent Resolution 9 is passed unanimously, that we ask Representative Krupp to carry it.
Oh.
So would that be okay, since he was the one bringing it forward? And congratulations.
We salute you.
All right. Well, we salute you. We're proud and thank you so very much. I hope we can get your names. If it's possible, I'll ask our administrator to bring you a tablet, Mr. Frazier, so we can get your names and Schaefer, sorry. I've got Fred and I almost had it right. Frazier Schaefer together here. You never know. You get a new name before you leave this committee.
Identifying.
Schaefer. Why do I want to say Frazier? I put Fred and Schaefer together, and I got Frazier. Okay. Well, that makes me happy, and I'm really pleased. I look forward to July 16th. Wow. We should get out a press release, and perhaps the Veterans Affairs Department will also. And the good directors say yes. That's great.
That's what I would suggest.
That's great.
This is our alternative.
I'm going to close the public hearing and work session on House Concurrent Resolution 9. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2864.
Okay.
And if, for those who are waiting, as soon as we complete 2864, we will be taking up House Joint Memorial 25.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2864, the original bill creates a Veterans Discharge Stipend Program. You have the Dash 1 amendment that broadens that considerably and would create an Oregon Veterans Emergency Financial Assistance Program. What we attempted to do was move several bills into this one, including these provision for these expenses, emergency or temporary housing and related housing expenses, such as expenses for utilities, insurance, house repairs, rent assistance, or food, emergency mental or medical or dental expenses, emergency transportation expenses related to starting a business, such as business licenses or occupational licenses, temporary income after military discharge, and legal assistance. This fund would be under the direction of the Director of Veterans Affairs, who would be adopting the regulations for implementing it. This bill also appropriates $1 million in general fund. It has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. It would, the emergency is declared, would take effect on July 1st, 2005.
Thank you very much.
You had a hearing on this bill in March, and that's why we did not show it as a public hearing, just a work session.
Right. Is there any discussion of the dash one?
I'm sure I have a question of the
Representative Boquist.
Dear Doctor, just to clarify, to make sure, is this the first or the second bill that we are addressing that actually specifies a specific dollar amount?
We've probably had several that have specified a specific dollar amount. I know the Troops and Teachers bill specified a specific dollar amount also. This is similar to House Bill 2602, which was a similar amount of appropriation directed at the families of active military. This is directed at those who are out of the military.
Yeah. Follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm just only looking for the dollar count from each of those bills today. That's the only thing I was looking for.
Yeah.
To refresh my memory whereabouts we're at. And I believe the education, the Troops to Teachers is about $165,000.
That's correct.
And then the other one, do you recall the rough amount of the other bill we passed out?
I don't. Okay. I have a list that I'm keeping with fiscal estimates that I can get to you.
I get at a later point. It's fine. Thank you, Chair.
The purpose of House Bill 2864 is to provide a net for, you know, it's a vet net. No vet can fall through it. We just determined that one of the biggest needs identified has been to address the financial impact of military service on an individual, the family breadwinner and his family or her family. The extra expenses, transportation, child care, lodging, all of those issues, as well as medical expenses, need to be considered. And certainly our hope that an individual who give so much of himself will not have to worry about what's happening over here to his family at those tough times when he goes into combat. So the purpose of the grant loan fund would be to provide destitute veterans, as well as veterans who've just come off a deployment and are looking to start or restart a business, and their immediate family assistance for subsistence. And it's the right thing to do. Any Representative Hunt?
Just a question, Madam Chair, on as we are defining veteran in this particular bill, I'm wondering if this definition is not quite as broad as the other definition that we passed in the other bill previously, because it still refers to a veteran 180 consecutive days unless they had a service-connected disability. So I don't know how this plays into the other mm-hmm. bill that we passed where we define veterans somewhat more broadly.
Yeah. I don't know how that even... That wasn't in the original bill. I don't know how it got in the amendment.
Yeah. Madam Chair, follow up on that?
Yes.
I mean, the definition that's in this else or this House bill amendment is, in fact, the old definition mm-hmm. out of the statute.
Right.
And just for the record, the new definition cleared committee, Senate committee yesterday, and was sent to the floor. And, mm-hmm. and I don't...
it came out unanimously, and Senator Frank Shields, who's able-bodied and has my notes, I think will easily carry it on the floor of the Senate. So I believe the new definition is going to be law here very shortly.
Would that take care of the problem its own, right?
I don't know.
I'm going to close the half session, the work session on the Dash 1 Amendment 2 and the House Bill 2864 and send it back to LCO to correct the definition of a veteran.
And that's the only thing we need to correct on that time.
I think so.
Yeah.
Very good process.
Thank you, Rookie Hunt, for being meticulous.
Yeah, Madam Chair, it may be just easier if Dr. Stembridge just tells them, you know, use the state law, just cite the state law as the definition. Yeah. That way, the change will be incorporated automatically.
And for those who don't know, would you give the definition of a veteran?
The definition of veteran that has passed the House and cleared the Senate Committee on Rules on the way to the floor is 178 days, a campaign or service ribbon, or a day of combat service on the ground in a combat theater. And the latter part of that, Madam Chair, as you know, is addressed at those individuals that were wounded in combat that served less than 30 days.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What is the next bill?
Oh, I would suggest.
No, I said
one.
The 25.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I'm going to open a work session on House Joint Memorial 25. Following House Joint Memorial 25 will be House Bill 2700.
Madam Chair, HJM 25 urges Congress to eliminate the subtraction of veteran disability payments from veteran pension payments. You have the Dash 1 amendment, which adds reference to Merchant Marine.
How are your staff doing?
Yes, good representatives. Do you all have the Dash 1? After we drafted the House Joint Memorial 25 that urges Congress to eliminate the practice that they have of subtracting disability payments from pension amounts due to disabled veterans, regardless of the level of disability, we found that in our description, we had the Army, the Navy, the Marines, the Air Force, the Coast Guard, the Reserves, and each state's National Guard, but we left out the Merchant Marines. So thanks to Representative Bruin, we now are complete. Is there any other branch of service that we've omitted? Okay.
Madam Chair, are we in work session right now on this?
Yes, we are.
I would move the Dash 1 amendment to House Joint Memorial 25.
Representative Bruin has moved the Dash 1 amendment to House Joint Memorial 25. Is there any discussion? I would like to just read this brief statement from the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America. They say, the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America strongly supports House Joint Memorial 25. The Paralyzed Veterans of America, our parent organization, has been advocating for concurrent receipt for all veterans with a service-connected disability. A disabled veteran with less than 20 years of service may still be a retiree from the military if that veteran's injuries were of such severity that they are no longer able to carry out their duties. These medical retirees are not provided with retirement pay and disability compensation, and that's a disgrace. That's not in here. I said that. This is a practice that is common in other governmental positions. Instead of the combined payments for disability and retirement, a disabled retiree must choose between Veterans Affairs compensation and their retirement pay. We believe this practice is unfair to those who serve our nation, and so do I. We are encouraged to see that Oregon's state legislature is standing up for those who have so honorably served our nation. Sincerely, Jerry Ryan, the president of the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America. Is there any further discussion? Okay, is there any objection? If not, the Dash 1 amendment is adopted to House Joint Memorial 25.
Madam Chair, I would move House Joint Memorial 25 as amended to the House floor with a do adopt recommendation.
Representative Bruin has moved House Joint Memorial 25 as amended to the House floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Aaron.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Kong.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
Aye.
Representative
Boone.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. House Joint Memorial 25 has passed this committee unanimously, and Representative Boone, would you be happy to carry this bill on the House floor? Thank you very much. And committees, I think this is really needed, and we're going to have to get buses from every state of the Union, fill them up, and we'll head to Washington and get this accomplished. Work session is ended on House Joint Memorial 25. We will now open a work session on House Bill 2700. And thank you for letting us get those through so people who needed to do whatever testify could get there. So.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2700, in its original form, directs the Director of Veterans Affairs to establish Veterans Service Officer Expansion Program. It allocates from the General Fund a blank amount to fund the program. It declares an emergency, takes effect July 1st, 2005. This is the bill that I've been, and you have been working with, the County Veterans Service Officers, the Department of Veterans Affairs, Oregon Association of Counties, develop consensus amendments, and Madam Chair, I would say we almost got there, except for the fact that nobody's happy with the amendments that we came up with. We have.
You know, I thought, Dr. Stembridge, once you got moving in those new Nike tennis shoes you wear with that nice suit,
okay,
that you'd have, you know, have really run this right back to the right place, and the right way.
Madam Chair, the near consensus amendments were the Dash 3, and I'd be happy to go through the Dash 3 with you. We have the Dash 4 amendments, which come from Representative from the County Veterans Service Officers Association. We understand that the Dash 5s are on their way through Representative Boquist from the Department of Veterans Affairs. We understand that the Oregon Association of Counties also has concerns about the Dash 3. I'd be happy to go through the Dash 3 if you would like.
Well, I think what I'd like is to see who would like to testify, if that'd be possible.
Well, we have six pages. No, it's only one page of sign-ups.
One page with 73 names.
Yes.
Okay, it says Tim Josie and Bill Pinhall. That's Tim Jost.
Josie.
Bill Pinhall. What happened to...
Did you open a work session on that?
No, we need a public hearing.
Oh, we need a public hearing and a work session. Yeah. Madam Chair, although we've been working on this bill the whole session here, we have not had a hearing.
So this will not be legal. So whatever you say will be held against you. Now it's legal. I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2700 as well as a work session.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Bill Pinhollow, representing the Association of Oregon Counties. And with me today is Tim Josie, Tillamook County Commissioner and President of the Association of Oregon Counties. We thank you, Madam Chair, for giving us this opportunity to present our support for the bill and to address a concern that we have. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first thing that I want to say is we deeply appreciate this bill. And we don't want to lose sight of the fact that this bill and the provisions, the overlying provisions within it, are sorely needed and deeply appreciated. The last time I had this many veterans in a hearing room was back in 1993 when I was in the legislature, and I sponsored a bill that would have created a license plate for Pearl Harbor survivors. And they asked me during the interim if I would sponsor the bill, and they said they'd been trying for many years. At that time, 42 other states had Pearl Harbor survivor plates, but they couldn't get anywhere in Oregon. Of course, I said yes. Well, we got the bill through, and I was in the legislature at the time. We got the bill through the House and then got it over to the Senate, and the chair of the Transportation Committee killed the bill. And so I went back in my room, had a temper tantrum, and the next morning I got the Pearl Harbor survivors in my office, and I told them, I said, look, I'm willing to continue on with this, but I don't think we're going to win on this one. And they taught me a lesson that has served me well for the rest of my political career. Never give up.
Winston Churchill. And never give up.
And we won, and we got that survivor's plate.
All right. Keep going.
The next time I had a number of veterans it was when I was a county commissioner. It was back in 2003, and we were talking about we were going through the budget, and we were concerned about funding for a veteran service officer, and the state kept reducing the funding. And
what year was this?
This was, I think it was 2003, and we had a room full of veterans in Tillamook County, and I am a Tillamook County commissioner, and they were concerned about the viability of that program. Well, that year we agreed to fund that position at $43,755. And today, we've, in the face of declining cuts, today, well, the next year's budget, which we just passed in draft form, will be $61,670. And the amount that we have received from the state has continually gone down, but we've continually raised the ante at the local level because we understand the importance of this program. The last story I'll tell you happened just yesterday at our Monday staff meeting for the commissioners. We had two veterans on the agenda, and they wanted to have us sponsor or put on the ballot a serial levy to fully fund this and augment the program that he, our veteran service officer, has performing. He's spending about 60 hours a week anyway, and he needs additional staff and a van.
Where was this?
It's in Tillamook County. And we actually tried to do that a year ago, and it failed narrowly. We told them we were in support of them moving forward. We wanted them to develop a campaign plan, come back to us. If we're going to put this back on the ballot, we want it to win this time. And so why I tell you these three stories, well, is because we as county commissioners, not just in Tillamook County, but all over the state of Oregon, recognize the importance of the Veteran Service Officer Program. We're not going to let you down. And we just won't do that. And that's the reason why we have problems with the Dash 6 amendments. We just don't think they're necessary. Section 6 of the Dash 3 amendments. You know what I'm talking about. We just don't think they're necessary, and we'd like to have further discussion with you about how we can resolve this issue. But by and large, my take-home message is that we really support this bill. It's high time, and we thank you very much for bringing it before us.
Madam Chair.
Yes, one moment. Mr. Jussie, help me understand what it says that you don't like.
Here's the three. Section six.
Section four, subsection two.
This is a county governing body that receives funds under Section 4 of this 2005 Act may not use the funds.
Which amendment are you reading from?
Oh, it's dash 3.
I think this is the same language in the dash 4.
May not supplant monies appropriated by the county government body. In other words, we can't reduce, if you're giving us more money, we can't reduce by a like amount we can't reduce what we're already putting in. I can tell you the veterans in the back of the room won't let us do that.
Well, I don't know why, but I don't seem to have a dash 3, but I'm going to keep looking.
Madam?
Yes, Representative Barr.
May I ask our good administrator to read the dash 3 amendments that they are referring to?
We're going
to
give you one as soon as we can.
I've got it right here. But I just thought.
I don't think we want to read 3 pages. We have
not
to
3 pages, just section 6 and 7.
Yeah. Oh, he's going to tell us what he just was telling us exactly what it said. I need to make this announcement. We've been called to the House, and we have to be in the House at 10 today. I don't know why. Nothing could be this important. But you know, it's happened. So wherever we leave off today is where we'll have to leave off. We'd invite you back tomorrow evening at what time?
We have posted the meeting for 3:30, but I think what we'd want to do is take a poll of the members and find out who's going to be there at 3:30, who can stay into the evening, and you can decide how much of a meeting you want to have tomorrow. Any measures that are not heard today will be carried over tomorrow, and any that are not heard tomorrow will be carried over for Thursday. So.
But not Friday. So, in order not to carry them over till Friday, is the need to have them heard on Wednesday night. I need to ask, Mr. Joseph, you understand this because you've been here. Is there anybody here who has traveled 100 miles to get here that whom we need to hear from right now?
The gentleman in the yellow hat. He's just saying goodbye.
Yeah, will you proceed? You're now all together on the dash 3 amendment. And where were you, Tim?
I just closed my book. I thought you were going to kick me out of here. So
I may give you 30 more seconds.
Tell me where.
Page 4.
Section 6 on page 4.
Don't worry, Tim. You're down to 20 seconds.
Huh? Here's the second thing. It says a county governing body that receives funds under Section 4 of this 2005 Act may not use the funds to supplant monies appropriated by the county governing body for county veteran service officers. In other words, we can't reduce what we're putting in just because the state has added some additional funds. We don't think that's necessary. We think it sets a policy that is a bit dangerous, and we're going to continue doing the right thing. We've been doing the right thing for several years.
Oh.
You're it.
Representative Farr, thank you, Madam Chair. My question for you, if I understand it right, your problem is with the Section 6 and 7 is the maintenance of effort.
Correct.
So, you know, our concern as a committee is, of course, that once we appropriate additional funds, that you'll reduce the funds that the county is appropriating accordingly.
State has done that several times, you know, with ballot measures, Measure 66. So the state's been guilty of that. Why wouldn't they suspect counties of being guilty of that?
Well, with all due respect to the counties, the purpose of the bill is to increase the funding that the county veteran service officers receive. And if we're appropriating money from the state and the counties decrease that money accordingly, then we've really kind of created a counterproductive effort.
You're going to find we're not going to do that. I think as a compromise, what we would, if we could report back to you next year, and if you see a problem, then we could revisit this issue.
Madam Chair, may I have a follow-up?
In just a moment, I'm going to ask Representative Brad Witt to come up and take a seat here between these two. This is former representative, so y'all have a lot in common. And you know Mr. Penhollow and Mr. Josie. And Brad, for the record, will you identify yourself, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Witt, representative from House District 31, appearing today in support of the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2700. We have in our county 5,700 veterans out of a total county population of 45,000 people. About 13% of our county are veterans, and we obviously have a very great need for veteran services there. Unfortunately, the veteran service officer from Columbia County, and I don't represent just Columbia County, but there is a particular problem there in terms of the services. Our veteran service officer is only available in the county 2 days a week, and as such, she barely has time to deal with the 300 odd members that comprise her caseload, let alone being able then to do any kind of work outside of her office. This is particularly problematic for those veterans who are aging, disabled, or otherwise infirm. This is becoming an increasing problem for World War II veterans, our greatest generation, increasingly for Korean veterans, and certainly for Vietnam veterans as time goes by. And so the very reasons for which they need services make it impossible for many of them to be able to travel to her office. The point I'm trying to make is that a very, very large percentage of the veterans population is unable to obtain services. Still other veterans in our county, not unlike the rest of the state, don't own a car, or they may be unable to drive. This poses a particular problem in a rural county, rural district such as mine, where public transportation is just not common, and it's where it is the exception rather than the rule, further making it difficult for veterans to obtain her services in her office. Now our veteran service officers are facing additional caseloads. Obviously, as we know, veterans returning from Afghanistan and Iraq. And I would just make the case to each and every one of you. I would plead on the behalf of the veterans that I have heard from now in two meetings in my district that they need these services. They want these services. They have told me unequivocally that they need a full-time service officer in our county. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, that's part of our obligation. To the folks that have served so selflessly in the interests of our liberty and the preservation of our democratic society. And that is why I am here today advocating for a $5 million allocation for veteran service officers here in the state of Oregon. With that, if you have questions, I'd attempt to try and answer them. I appreciate very much the opportunity to make the case on behalf of these servicemen and women. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate very much your taking the time to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, now, Mr. Josie, I interrupted you. Did you get it finished while I was stepped out to talk to the soldiers? Okay, Representative Farr.
Thank you. My follow-up is actually regarding subsection 2 of Section 6. And if you read it carefully, it says, notwithstanding subsection 1, a county governing body may reduce the amount of monies appropriated by the county governing body for county veteran service officers if there is a decrease in the amount of revenues available to the county for the same period of time. So I think that clearly says if you do see a decrease in revenues, then you can reduce the amount of money that you're appropriating for county veteran service officers accordingly, because obviously you're going to need to shift funds to be able to cover all the areas that the county is required to fund.
We're in favor of subsection 2.
But my point is, Madam Chair, if I may, my point is to me, that answers the concern that you've stated, which is, You would prefer that subsection 6 and subsection 7, or section 6 and section 7, excuse me, they're not subsections, that the maintenance of effort referral in each of those, you feel that we would be directing you to continue to fund the County Veterans Service Officer Program at their current levels. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
Is there any reason, then, other than a reduce in revenue, that you would not be able to fund those positions at their current levels?
No, we wouldn't. We just don't want it in statute.
All right. That answers my question.
Any other questions from Mr. Josie? For Mr. Pinhall, did you testify?
No, ma'am. I'm available if you have questions.
Did you identify yourself while I was gone?
I did, madam.
Good.
Madam Chair, yes. Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else on this list who traveled a long way and would not be able to come back tomorrow afternoon? Okay. I want to thank you all for being here today, and I just want to correct a couple of items that because I think we maybe got a little bit of information that was not correct earlier, and I got email on it. One second here. I just want to read this point. This came up regarding some testimony that someone heard over the recording here. I have just learned about House Bill 2681 and agree that providing high school diplomas to Oregon veterans is the right thing to do to honor their service to their country. I became aware of the House bill by listening to the audio of the Senate's General Government Committee's hearing on Senate Bill 667 that I was unable to attend. I wish I could have attended both hearings. I'm taking a little bit out of these. Senate Bill 667 would amend the current legislation to grant diplomas to all veterans that served honorably and had attended high school prior to entry into the service. House Bill 2681, which we passed a few minutes ago, will amend the current legislation to grant diplomas to veterans of the listed wars and campaigns. Both of these bills are a step in the right direction to honor the veterans of the state of Oregon. House Bill 2681 may have forgotten many veterans who have served in the defense of their country and the protection of their fellow Americans. What about those in the failed rescue attempt of the hostages in Iran, to mention one? Not everyone who has made a sacrifice in the protection of American freedom has received a campaign ribbon. It takes more than just the frontline soldier to run a war. Those that serve in a supportive role to the frontline soldier or in defensive role elsewhere in the world are no less of an honored veteran than those with a war ribbon. When I first took up the challenge to get my diploma, as other veterans have, I only thought of myself and asked that only Vietnam veterans be included in the amendment. I think that passing a bill that honors service by all veterans is the right thing to do. Current enlistment in most branches of the service requires a high school diploma or in small percentage a GED before you can join. The change in educational requirements came in the late 60s and early 70s. That doesn't mean that in the future this won't change again. And once again, they will either draft or let you enlist without a diploma. Mr. McDonald was right in saying that the bill should be written so that it will not need to be changed in the future. Thank you for taking the time to read this, and I appreciate all that the committee does for the veterans. So I just want to make it clear that we feel very strong for all of our veterans, and we do understand those who have had a supportive role made a critical difference in our success. Wanted to be sure that that was read for the record. Okay. Seeing no other new business, I'll adjourn this meeting, and I'll see y'all at 3:30 on Wednesday.